So I'll talk about the work that is not very recent, and probably some of you have heard about it. So my apologies in this case, but definitely not everybody. So our goal was to, as you see, I'm coming from, thank you. I'm coming from continuum mechanics framework, and I've been working on plasticity for a while as a continuum theory. And more recently, the focus have shifted to study of the fluctuations. And our goal was to reduce this model to something that is mathematically manageable. In particular, we wanted to reduce the plasticity problem to a kind of sand pile type of automaton. So there are different types of reduction that people have proposed to, for instance, to the pinning problems, to problem of interacting dislocations. But our attempt is to find the kind of a core machine inside any plasticity scheme, and in particular to find the link with sand pile automata. So this is how plasticity is viewed in engineering science. So there is an yield surface in the space of stress, and in terms of stress-strain relation, so there is elastic region and there is a kind of a flow plateau. In fact, in reality, there is a hardening, but we look at the plasticity where hardening is minimal, because recently it has become clear that, say, in BCC crystals with significant hardening, plasticity is very different. So already this picture has some kind of mysterious elements. So first, it's clear from this picture that inside the yield surface, you can have a stable static state if you apply loads, while outside there is dynamics. So this is a boundary where solids become marginally stable.
This is the horizontal axis.
It's also sigma. They're both sigma. So So it's during plastic flow the material is in a marginally stable state. Then second mystery had been always that heat is produced even at infinitely slow loading. So there is a fast motion is hidden even when the loading is infinitely slow. And also an attempt to interpret this thermodynamically, for instance, came to this problem that the area under this curve actually has almost nothing to do with the stored energy. In most of plasticity model, stored energy is zero. So the area under this curve is actually dissipation.
Lev, I don't understand your curves. Can you go back? On the left and the right, these are two different plots.
Yeah, maybe I have to be more detailed. So here we are talking about different components of stress. For instance, shear stress, different components of shear.
But on the
here,
right,
we take one component, for instance, uniaxial test. Okay. You take sigma 1, 1, and here we put strain, and we plot them, kind of one projection of what's really happening, but they're representative. So it's, although there was a theory, and there is a continuum theory very successful in describing average behavior, there is some kind of mysterious question of the physical nature. Now, more recently, the focus has shifted towards fluctuations. For instance, even a smooth curve like this, if you zoom in terms of strain and in terms of time, you see fluctuations. And fluctuations have important because people started to think that they can carry some information about the health of a sample. For instance, how close it to fatigue death. So you have to listen to this melody that comes from this and determine what's really, non-destructively, what's really happening with your sample. The second reason is that we started looking at the samples that are so small that those fluctuations start to interfere with different processes like forming, etc. So you could not control the deformation. So that's the reason. Now, looking at this fluctuation, this again a smooth curve that used to be a subject of continuum theory of plasticity. So if you look at velocities, they fluctuate. And here is an example of a study of statistics that we have already seen at this conference by Jerome Weiss in ice. He sees the intermittent signal with a particular exponent over many decades. Yeah, this is dissipated energy, yes.
And what is on the x-axis on the left?
Here?
Yeah.
It's the log of the probability.
No, on the left plot.
Here there are two axes. Here there is a displacement, and here there is a velocity. And so this is displacement.
On the x-axis? On the horizontal?
Time or strain applied.
And what is on the vertical axis on the right?
So it's a log-log plot of the event of a certain energy, because you can open up and there is an avalanche behind every peak, and this is a probability to encounter event with this energy. So also some careful analysis of the distribution of dislocations and attempts to compute its fractal dimension or correlation function have shown that there is a spatial correlations as well. While again, classical vision of plasticity is that it's a collection of uncorrelated events with the characteristic, for instance, displacement and sleep. Now, there are of course many attempts to model it, and the prominent part of the studies is discrete dislocational dynamics that have done in 3D, and people are able to get exponents close to the ones that observed in experiment. But this is a direct numerical simulation. So first of all, and second of all, in order to conduct these computations, you need to add certain rules. And the rule number one is how dislocations move, how pitch curler force depends on velocity, and usually it's linear, while in this kind of zero temperature conditions, you have some Peierls barriers, the dependence not necessarily linear. Then you have to put rules of how you nucleate dislocations, how dislocations interact with obstacles, how they kind of annihilate. So there is a lot of cooking around these schemes. And in fact, different authors report very different exponents. So it's a bit like in turbulence, direct numerical simulation of turbulence, which even though it gives us some kind of observable behavior, but we really don't understand why is it like this. So the goal was to somehow reduce it to something considerably more simple that can be have some transparency. As for instance, in the pinning, there is a certain transparency that is achieved by dropping details. So the goal is to drop details and to replace rules by something that we would be more coherent in a sense.
So this is the structure of the dislocation density field or the plastic strain field, or does it matter? So in the previous picture, it was the exponent was for the fractal dimension of the dislocation density field. Right? On the previous,
this is also for energy, but it's also sometimes replaced by plastic slip. I don't really remember exactly, but I guess this is placed here because this is a quantity that can be compared with exponent 1.6 in the previous graph. Here it's more close to 1.5.
But that's energy as a function of what? What is the?
It's a probability distribution of the signal is intermittent like in experiment, and this is a probability distribution of avalanches. Okay, so before my model, ultimate model that we think is the minimal model of plasticity, of crystal plasticity, will be two-dimensional. But before I go to two-dimension, I'll introduce zero-dimension and one-dimensional example just to introduce a certain concept and to explain why things in two-dimension are happening the way they're happening. So the simple zero-dimensional model is a kind of a trivial depending model in a periodic potential. In fact, it was proposed by Ludwig Prandtl in 1928, not exactly in this form, but very similar. Now, there is an overdamped motion, there is some viscosity here, and this is a potential, so it's carried by this kind of quadratic potential. This E was called by Pierre Ledoux's mass. And the important thing is what is happening when the rate of loading goes to zero. So in this case, you can rescale time in such a way that viscosity will depend on the rate of loading. And when the rate of loading will go to zero, it's equivalent to kind of zero viscosity limit in this equation. And what will happen is that the actual dynamics will mostly concentrate on metastable branches of this energy landscape. So you stay on the metastable branch, you reach the limit of stability, then you look for the nearest metastable branch, and etc. So this suggests that maybe there is an automaton structure behind. So if you simplify elasticity and somehow integrate it out, for instance, if you assume that it's linear, you can eliminate continuous variables completely and just arrange the dynamics here as a set of switches between this kind of local minima of this potential with some kind of rules controlling the switch. So that was for us a motivation to take a more elaborate model of plasticity and reduce it to this picture. This is some details of how it works. You, in the limit of kind of rate of loading going to zero in non-dimensional variables, you have this mu going to zero, and as a result, you get relaxational oscillations here, this type of dynamics. What is interesting, I won't have time, the dissipation in the resulting motion, if you arrange those jumps, make them infinitely small and infinitely often, you may arrange rate-independent dissipation here. It's because dissipation depends on the number of switches that you have rather than on the kind of rate dependence of dynamics. So you start with a quadratic dissipation in the micro model and you get kind of homogeneous function of degree one in the dissipation in the macro model. And that's the beginning of all continuum theories. Usually continuum theories start with this. They automatically assume it. But in fact, behind this picture is the microscopic kind of limit of this type, double limit. So you have slow loading and infinitely small scale of those switches. Yes.
So do I understand correctly, you pull your particle, which has the coordinate alpha, over a tilted washboard potential.
Yes.
This is essentially the model.
No, I pull it through epsilon.
Epsilon is 3 times t.
It's what?
Epsilon dot is 1.
Yeah, exactly.
And you put right also time there. Right?
Yeah, sure.
So is it the same to say to pull this part?
Yeah, exactly. I'm pulling this with a
spring, and my
washboard potential. So here we are in a kind of strong pinning regime in terms of the talk that was given yesterday. Parameters are chosen to be in a strong pinning regime, and that as a result we have jumps. So this was, in a sense, explained in the talk of Vadim yesterday or the day before. Okay, this is zero-dimensional model. This is all motivation for us. Now let's look at one-dimensional model. So in this case, we can think about the deck of cards, because in plasticity, in a sense, at least in some cases, you have a kind of set of the bands, And in each band, the system slips and then saturates. So you may think about it as a double well potential. So you go from one well to another, and this is a slip. You can think about the deck of rigid cards that interact through this double well potentials. And this is, in fact, equivalent to a set of snap springs with double well potential that you stretch. So if you look at this model, you don't need to postulate here no periodic potentials. But again, the overdamped dynamics is very similar, because each element can be in two states. So there are 2 to the power n local minima here. And you follow your local minima till you become unstable, and you make those switches. So this is a set of metastable states that's like in the talk of Gilles. And the system stays in the kind of marginally stable state near the boundary of stability. And of course, it's described by these plasticity laws, as we have seen in a zero-dimensional model. And this shows that the energy, so you load it when you go like this, and here you oscillate near the point, kind of spinodal point. Here in a piecewise quadratic potential, it coincides with a switch point, but in fact it's a point where the energy loses local convexity. So those are preparations giving us some idea that what we should expect, but again, this is not rich enough. So even if you put kind of some Gaussian disorder in your thresholds, and if you put in this 1D model ferromagnetic coupling, a kind of next to nearest neighbors interaction, in a previous model with just snap springs, it was like a diamagnetism, so the spins were only interacting through the mean field. But if so, you can have something more realistic. You can have a little peak here. You can have those random oscillations, but they're still Gaussian. So that's a kind of 1D analog of random fieldizing model, but with soft spins. So there is not enough structure inside. So now let's go to 2D model. So this is a 2D lattice. In fact, we've seen these hatched domains often in the talks, but since we are in the kind of crusade of dropping the details, we said, okay, let's allow plasticity to happen only in one slip plane. So we make those things, in a sense, rigidly moving only in horizontal direction. There is no motion in the vertical direction. So we drop one of the modes. So only one slip plane is activated. You may also view it in amorphous language as a set of shear bands and that are nicely organized. So, but we'll stay with the crystalline framework just for kind of clarity. So our field is a displacement field. It's horizontal. So, for instance, one layer can shift with respect to another layer, and usually in the dislocation theory, people introduce so-called relabeling. They relabel nearest neighbors, for instance, A and B. Those bonds are, of course, imaginative. They don't exist in reality. But they draw this picture like this, introduce a Burgers vector. But we prefer to deal with this picture. So we keep the association of B and A. So this layer is just sheared. So in this case, there is no explicit Burgers vector, no discontinuity. And you can, it's a bit like what Thomas was talking about, this modeling of cracks with the dislocation. So this is a kind of interior of one layer of his crack. Yes?
Normally, one thinks to go from your uppercase to the, say, lower left, just by moving a single dislocation through the crystal.
Yeah.
But you assume that you translate in one step the whole layer? From
no, it will be in the next slide. Okay. So this is just, I try to increase the complexity gradually. So here is just intended to explain that we are not doing this relabeling. That's why some pictures will look differently. So for instance, with the labeling, the configuration with one dislocation would look like this, or with two dislocations would look like this, but our no relabeling scheme would give the same configuration of black dots, but with a continuous lattice here, with a continuous lattice here. Of course, the price that we have to pay, because this relabeling is to maintain quadratic nature of elasticity, the linear elasticity. So here we have to deal with the periodic potentials, because this element A minus should have the same energy as element A. Okay, so finally we have a model. So it's again like in it's an overdamped dynamics. This is our potential. This is our viscosity that will eventually drive to zero. So the potential depends on displacement u in a horizontal direction. Now, we form two strain variables out of this displacement. So the first one, theta, is the elongation of the horizontal bond. So it will be a quadratic variable, non-order parameter type of variable that will be needed to bring non-locality in the model. And another one is the kind of order parameter variable. It's a shear. It's the kind of roughly the angle. And with respect to this variable, we assume that our potential is periodic. Later it will be replaced by piecewise quadratic. So you have this periodic function in C. You have a, which is a kind of gradient, theta, which is also a gradient, and we can put quenched disorder, like in the random field as a model, by biasing those potential with the Gaussian distribution of independent kind of biases. Now, the whole thing is being deformed by just application of homogeneous loads at the boundary, not loads, displacement. So here is this T that was mentioned before, and there's a periodic boundary conditions in a horizontal dimension. Now, eventually, we'll try to simplify this model even further. Now, the non-locality is coming from the fact that there are some compatibility conditions. Xi and theta are not independent. They can be expressed through U, so there is some kind of, in linear elasticity, it's called Saint-Venant condition, or kind of the curvature is equal to zero here, that those are gradients. So, for instance, if you decide to adiabatically eliminate theta, you will have some non-local interaction, and this non-local interaction is what we call Ashelby here at this conference, with the internal language. It is very anisotropic, yes. Okay, we can discuss the direct link. Okay, now we can do numerical experiments. So we already simplified it, and first we'll do numerical experiments with this model. So here is a numerical code where we can use fast Fourier transform on linear variables because it's quite massive computations. Here is some preparation of what we are going to see. So we introduce defects. So defects are like also, like we've heard in a previous talk, we put kind of Ashelby type of inclusions, if you want, some homogeneity. And then if you apply load, the system forms a couple of dislocations here, here. So it's a 2D, so those are loops in 3D. And when you increase load, the dislocation move apart, then they kind of come back from the boundaries, and eventually you can have a full slip. So this is a kind of microscopic picture of our configuration around here. Those colors are dislocations of two different signs. And so although there is no slip, this is really a set of dislocations. So this is a more rich picture. Now what are we seeing? So if we start to cyclically load this system, we want to achieve a non-equilibrium steady state where we can expect to see our statistics.
So you already put in local quench disorder for the local strain energy densities at this point?
Yes, yes. But it turns out that this order is kind of irrelevant. We varied it in a very wide range, and we don't see any effect on the exponent. So it's just to avoid some kind of easy paths of when all sleep is localized on one plane or things like this, to create some kind of frustration. Okay, so this is Scholl's stress strain. You start here, and then you cycle, and eventually you converge to a so-called shakedown state, what's called in plasticity. You go always around the same kind of loop, but of course there are fluctuations. If you look at the dislocation density, first you have some overshoot, but then the dislocation density converges to some stable level, and of course it oscillates. Here I'll show you two movies, giving you some details. So this is a is a still elastic range. So there are few dislocations appearing. White points are those Eshelby inclusions, and we are still off the plateau where the yielding happens. You will see when we approach yielding, the number of dislocations will dramatically increase. And so then we go back from this plateau.
I'm sorry, could you explain what you mean again by the Eshelby inclusions? What are the white things?
It's a kind of centers of dilatation locally.
Do they act like the cleaning centers kind of thing? Or are they heterogeneous?
Yeah. You may.
But on this previous slide, you explained that they are kind of nucleation center for dislocation pairs, but in your film movie there are dislocations appearing everywhere.
Maybe what will help if I show the now slow movie on the yielding surface. So this is what is happening. So those whites are the inhomogeneities. Blue and red, if those who sees that, those are dislocations of two different signs. That's what's happening in the steady state yield.
But so I'm sorry, so you have not gone to the automaton case yet, or have
not
you?
Yet? Okay. Not yet. So this is a direct numerical simulation, if you will. Now you see that it's a picture, is a kind of orthogonal to the pinning, because all dislocations are in the direction perpendicular to this picture. So what's crucial here is interaction of dislocations on different planes. Yes? So they can form some kind of locks, some dipoles. So you see, like you have a, what we call, later I'll explain, kind of cities that are formed, and between the cities there are exchanges. So as you see, dislocation can move in both directions. So it's very different from classical depinning kind of monotone scheme. So so if you've never seen plasticity, steady state plasticity, this is it. Okay.
This is quite similar to the 2D dislocation dynamic simulations, right? Where you just have the straight edge dislocations and going.
True. Yeah. True. But the main difference is that there are no rules here. For instance, we don't put a relation between pitch curler force and the dislocational velocity. The kinetics is whatever kinetics comes from the overcoming barriers. Now the nucleation, it nucleates where it needs to nucleate. The dislocations disappear also. So, but otherwise, if you just take, and also there are clusters of very closely interacting dislocations. So in this case, this kind of green functions that usually used for dislocations that are spaced sparsely may not be applicable, while this model would capture it. But otherwise, if you take one isolated dislocations and another one, it's probably interacts by the kind of Bisevar rules, like what is used in discrete dislocational dynamics. We also have here Pyle's barriers, So, for instance, kinetics, it starts to move only after certain driving force is reached, rather than at zero. Temperature here is zero. All right, so now we can do statistics, the same as an experiment. And we were quite amazed that we got 1.6. And I should say that experiments were done in ice, where also one slip plane only is activated. There is no entanglements. Pars barriers are rather low. And so maybe it's not that surprising that the 2D models captures the 3D experiment so nicely, have many decades here.
Okay, and the cutoff on the low end is just because you're driving at finite rate, presumably, right? I'm looking at the dissipated energy as a function of.
Yeah, we also have a finite scale of our lattice, so small events will start to interfere with the discreteness.
And your energy is defined as integral of v squared dt or something. The energy often avalanche in this case.
Ux dot integrated, like viscous dissipation. Because here there is no problem, it's a continuous model. We fully resolve fast events here. So it's just a viscous dissipation like in the viscosity model.
But this is precisely what Carmen Miguel did.
What who?
What Carmen Miguel did in her simulation. You're looking at you're making a histogram of the instantaneous dissipation.
Yeah, true, it's the same dissipation, yes. Mm-hmm. The exponent is different because because of the reasons that still needs to be understood. Maybe some of the rules affect the dynamics or kinetics of individual dislocations different. Okay, you may also look at other type of, for amplitudes, you can look at statistics for durations.
Amplitudes of, how do you define the amplitude?
I guess it's the plastic slip.
It's not the amplitude of the velocity, slip velocity, right? It's the amplitude.
No, it's I would say it's.
So it's equivalent of the avalanche size.
Yeah, it's amplitude of the avalanche size. Yes.
If it's like a slip area.
So if this is the energy, it would be integral of this velocity. This would be the amplitude. All right. So this is, here is another maybe movie showing the stress, how stress fluctuates. Again, you see some kind of arrangements here. And the kind of exchanges between them. So you have these kind of groups and the messengers between them. We also looked at the power spectrum for the velocity, and it shows 1 over f slope here. We also look at spatial correlations, because you can use different methods of estimating fractal dimension. Like correlation function, for instance, for those dots at the first cycle, and it shows dimension 2, as you would expect for random inhomogeneity, but after in a shakedown state, it's 1.74, which again shows the development of correlations. You can also look at the energy distribution, because those dislocation kind of centers where they localize, they have kind of spiky energy distribution. You may look at the, for instance, level sets and determine how many kind of regions with a certain energy. Take this probability, and again, it shows a log in log plot. It shows the same type of correlations. Here, as a joke, I will give some parallel. So this is distribution of humans in a random landscape. And this is a distribution of dislocations in a random landscape. This is France. And as we know, there is also power law here. So we are not very different that from dislocations in the way we organize ourselves in this. Yeah, no, it's a peak.
It's the Eiffel Tower.
It's the Eiffel Tower. Yeah. Go ahead. No, it looks like the Eiffel Tower.
Okay, so now we want to reduce it even further, because still it's a very intense computations that take weeks with this 5,000 dislocations. Now, and we use this idea about automatons. So when nu goes to zero, so most of the time the system will be in one of the local minima, and there will be a succession of switches between these branches. So also it's helpful to replace periodic potential by piecewise quadratic potential and introduce integer valued variable d that tells us in which of the wells we are. So during the conference I was giving similar type of description for Martensitic phase transitions, where d was a kind of a POTS variable with few values. Here d is an integer value, so that already gives some kind of sandpile spirit. So the idea is to eliminate the continuous variable and to write full dynamics only in terms of this integer valued variable that sits on a lattice. So since periodicity of this whole system, you can do it. So you can explicitly express in the Fourier space this field Xi. So the sources of this field is the plastic strain, this integer valued plastic strain, and the disorder that is formed by our functions H1 and H2 that gives us this random biases for our two variables. So that's the way we eliminate elasticity, and those are the kernels. Now we can look at the thresholds. So the convenient variable here is a deviation of the local stress. I mean the component of stress that's an order parameter, xi, not theta. Theta has disappeared already from the loading, homogeneous loading component and the disorder related residual strain. And this variable, when you reach the boundaries of the corresponding quadratic well, the system switches variable D. So that would happen when this variable reaches these thresholds. And this threshold depends on time, because loading, in a sense, shifting those thresholds, and then when thresholds, so you see the dynamics is different from random fieldizing model, for instance. The dynamics deals with the reaching of the tops of the barriers rather than comparing the depth of the bottoms of the wells.
Can I ask a question? I mean, if you eliminate the elastic degrees of freedom, so if you would do this with the full model, then essentially you would have only the dislocations left.
Yeah.
Now, what is the relation between the dislocation degrees of freedom and your degrees of freedom, which you treat in this?
Yeah, so dislocations are the boundaries of the domain where integer, because our integer valued variable, it's a kind of from steps, yes? So the boundary of the, for instance, zone when xi goes from 0 to 1, this is a dislocation. So it's kind of implicit here. So we can form an automaton. So of course it contains a kernel, and the kernel doesn't have a quadruple symmetry because we impose strong anisotropy. It's a kind of dipole symmetry, but still it's this type of Eshelby interaction here. So if this is our strain field, we are moving the thresholds here. Now, contrary to conventional sandpile automaton, there are thresholds on both sides. because you can form dislocations of two different sides. So when you reach a threshold, there is a discharge that's controlled by these rules, and then you may again have be beyond threshold. There is another discharge till you reach the state where you are inside the thresholds, and thresholds, they are evolving with loading, and they also depend on disorder. So this is the kind of minimal automaton that sits behind this, we believe, this plastic behavior. Now, if you look at the now how it, observable variables would be formed, you have serrations. After a few cycles, you approach the shakedown state. You have a fluctuating field. And so first, we don't see the same exactly power law, the power spectrum. We don't see 1 over F noise. We see another exponent. But the good thing is that in terms of the dissipated energy, we have exactly the same exponent 1.6 as in a dynamic model. So of course, this is because in automaton, you don't resolve fast time scales, and so it affects the distribution over frequencies. But in terms of the statistics of events, you fully recover the picture that was in the dynamical model. And here, it's a much faster, of course, so we could also do some finite scale scaling, finite size scaling, so we could also find the exponent of over the scaling function delta. It's 1.2, and it agrees with some other estimates of Zeiser and others. So the conclusion that the automaton does capture the dynamics, the main kind of scaling in the original dynamics. You can also achieve the collapse of the for the shapes of avalanches when time is fixed and when energy is fixed. So this is the energy of this is the shape of the avalanche.
Square.
Yeah, no, here it's not u dot square. This is a slip. This is equivalent because in automaton system we don't have an explicit dissipation. But you can still compute dissipation because during this jump between branches you can compute the dissipated energy. So it's computed as a summation of this discontinuous jump. And that's the end of the picture. So, few conclusions. So there is a model of crystal plasticity allowing to study cooperative effects without any additional assumptions such as nucleation rates and kinetic relation. And it shows excellent agreement with experimental observations on HCP crystals, at least. Also, this exponent 1.6, if you those who attended the conference, that's what is typically observed in earthquakes models and also in colloidal crystals experiments show this, but Karen has many other experiments where she interprets exponents differently, so but at least there is a group of experiments that may be described by this model. So the second maybe message that in fact dynamics can be reduced to integer automaton, and despite the fact that of course we changed the microscopic properties, we replaced periodic potential by piecewise quadratic and removed the fast stages, the statistics is the same as in ODE model. And we also tried to check the Abelian property of this automaton. We could not prove anything, but we tried different discharge rules where all unstable units are simultaneously discharged, or there is a kind of random discharge and the minimal strain discharge, and they all give the same statistics, although the and also the same resulting shakedown shape of the hysteresis. So macroscopically, we were not able to distinguish between those different strategies. So in principle, this symmetry, if proved, it opens the way to rigorously study this discrete dynamical system and maybe understand finally why plasticity shows this scaling. Thank you.
Questions?
When you said it's the same critical behavior, besides the value of the exponent, are there other pieces of evidence? Or is it just that it's 1.6?
So several exponents match, also this exponent match, but we don't have the same power spectrum exponent. So we could not find the scaling function in dynamical model because it's too heavy computation. So it was not systematically kind of compared in all the details yet. But there is some evidence that certain aspects are captured.
So the single slip system is probably relevant for ice. But have you done multiple slip systems by adding something vertical that could interfere?
Yeah, that's of course important, and as you've seen from Jerome Weil's talk, the more geometrical rigidity you put in the system, the more there are entanglements and the more it interferes with scaling. So we expect that activating more slip planes, like in BCC we have up to 24, it impedes the scaling, and the system more becomes a collection of kind of independent events. So you can expect scaling in those systems where there is less of a rigidity, and probably in amorphous system, the fact that you can form these shear bands without being restricted by geometrical structure of the slip planes, that opens more possibility for self-organization. But here it's seen in all HCP crystals, in some FCC crystals, people see scaling of this type. So so there is a certain island where you can expect criticality if you want, but it's not true that all plastic events in metal are necessarily critical. But it's good to, of course we are thinking about a model with two slip planes, and and it's in the work.
And this,
it's less pure, like mathematically probably you won't be able to see the things that you are able to see here. So this is what we see, something perpendicular to the pinning, but the recent work of Pierre and Kai seem to be saying that maybe sand piles and the pinning models are internally connected, so maybe it's ultimately similar. But the goal was to somehow drop as many details as possible, not to add, which is a natural next step. So,
in this model, this two-dimensional model, the simplified model, but not the automaton model, do you know how the dislocation, the forces between dislocations look like? I mean, what is the distance dependence in this simplified model?
Yeah, of course, of course. So it's described by we did the tests to show that dislocations interact like dislocations interact, and highly anisotropic solids. So it's not going to be directly this type of Eshelby interaction. The same, because there are dislocations, because very close to molecular dynamics, in fact, It's just that our elements with the periodic energy, they are not Lennard-Jones elements, so they include each one many elements. So there is a kind of elementary coarse graining is happening here. But otherwise, it's kind of coarse grain molecular dynamics without temperature. Yeah.
You mentioned amorphous materials, but this technique, would you be able to look at amorphous when you have the underlying lattice, so it wouldn't be applicable in that case, or you couldn't
no,
imagine?
That's a more like a metaphor. The idea is that there you form a set of shear bands, and in each shear band, you may have a repeated local slip. So this repeated local slip can be modeled by randomly biased periodic potential. So and those events may propagate, like we've seen in Procaccio's talk, the events propagate along the slip. So that's a remote kind of analogy with the propagation of dislocations. But of course, in lattices, it's very explicit.
But I would say that if you just increased, if you made the quench disorder very strong and you allowed for another slip system to be turned on, it would be very similar, if not identical, to models people use for.
But if you glasses. If you make that much shorter, you won't be able to do all the Fourier transform techniques and stuff, right? I mean, it's based on having.
No, it's here. It's a disorder viewed as a linear perturbation, so you can still handle it by these kind of linear techniques.
One question?
Just one quick one on the power spectra. This is the power spectra of the slip velocities, or is it power spectra? Or I can catch you later on the details.
It's for I think it's for the dissipated energy, time dependence of dissipated energy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's okay, so we can